Oh yes, hello friends, welcome back. My guest today is mountaineer extreme and former SPS operative Nims Purger, the fastest that anyone had previously climbed the 14 Death Zone mountains, which are the mountains higher than 8,000 meters, was 8 years, and Nims did it in 7 months. So today, expect to learn what the human body is truly capable of, how purpose can overcome fatigue, the truth behind that Everest photo, what effect Nims has noticed climate change has made to the mountains, and much more. These last few weeks, man, like the Marcus Smith episode, the Tom Otten episode, this one with Nims is just, it's blowing me away in seeing what the human body is capable of. And this episode just is so unbelievable. The guy is aligned, awakened, completely at peace, but also an absolute savage at the same time. Like, just a wonderful, wonderful ambassador. I'm super, super proud of what he's done, and whatever he gets up to over the next year is going to be hugely, hugely entertaining and crazy. So make sure that you go and give him a follow. This story's outrageous, so get ready for it today. Also, obviously, if you love this episode, please share it with a friend. It would make me so happy. The only way that this show grows is by people like you sharing it with people like you, and you're not going to find a more motivational and inspirational story this year. This episode is brought to you by Crafted London. Finding men's jewelry that doesn't suck is very difficult, and Crafted London have nailed it. They're the number one men's jewelry company worldwide. They're sweatproof, waterproof, heatproof, and gymproof. They've got custom designs in gold and silver, necklaces, chains, pendants, bracelets, rings, and earrings. If you've seen me on any of the big cinema episodes on YouTube wearing a necklace, it will always be from Crafted. I absolutely love it. It works with formal wear, casual wear, whether it's daytime or nighttime. All of their pieces are super high quality. The designs are great, and I love them. It's all I wear. Also, they have an unlimited lifetime guarantee, so if your piece breaks for any reason at any point during the entire life of the product, they will give you a new one for free. Get a 15% discount site-wide on everything by going to bit.ly/cdwisdom and using the code MW15 at checkout. That's bit.ly/letter C letter D wisdom and MW15 at checkout. All right, quick maths. The less that your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have, the more money that you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce the costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you are improving efficiency by bringing all your business processes into one platform. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the maths and see how you will profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/modern right now. That's netsuite.com/modern. This episode is brought to you by Whoop. I've worn Whoop for over 4 years now, since way before they were a partner on the show, and it is the only wearable I have ever stuck with because it's the best. It is so innocuous, you do not remember that you've got it on, and yet it tracks absolutely everything 24/7 via something from your wrist. It tracks your heart rate, it tracks your sleep, your recovery, all of your workouts, your resting heart rate, your heart rate variability, how much you're breathing throughout the night. It puts all of this into an app and spits out very simple, easy to understand, and fantastically usable data. It's phenomenal. I am a massive, massive fan of Whoop, and that is why it's the only wearable that I've ever stuck with. You can join for free. Pay nothing for the brand new Whoop 4.0 strap. Plus, you get your first month for free, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. So you can buy it for free, try it for free, and if you do not like it, after 29 days, they will give you your money back. Head to join.whoop.com/modernwisdom. That's join.whoop.com/modernwisdom. But for now, get ready for this one. The wise, wonderful, and absolutely insane Nims Purger.
Yeah.
Nims Bloody Purger, how are you, my brother?
I'm good, Chris, and so, you know, glad to be here, you know, talking with you in your podcast and all. You keeping well?
I'm very well, man. I'm in the fifth location that I've recorded in out in Dubai. So for everybody that's watching, this is yet another backdrop that you need to get used to. Thankfully, the internet is significantly better here. And you're in, is that your garden?
I'm in Kathmandu, brother, you know. So, yeah, I'm staying in this, you know, hotel, Park Villas. They're like family to me. And just I'm here quarantined. So, you know.
It looks beautiful, man. It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. You were 6 years away from a full pension from the Special Forces, and then you leave to climb 14 of the highest mountains on Earth. Why?
Wow. Spot on, buddy. So for me, everything what I do in life, it needs to have a purpose. And I started climbing, you know, first when I was 29 years old, and that kind of started leading into the project, which was to climb all the 14 highest mountain of the world, which is above 8,000 meters. We call that as a death zone peak. And there are only 14 of those. And the fastest someone had climbed this was, you know, nearly 8 years, you know, 14 days short, 8 years. And I felt like I could do this in, you know, within 7 months. And why? Why I left all my, you know, like job security, pension and everything. It was purely because I felt like I had a bigger purpose. And honestly, if it was money, for money, I would have never been able to achieve this kind of, you know, goal or project. If it was for the selfishness, or it was just for our family, or, you know, all this love, affections and all those bubbles that we live in, again, I wouldn't be even close to achieve this kind of mission. But what I had purely believed in was I really wanted to show the world that, you know, what human body is capable of. And for those who doesn't understand, you know, the big, you know, high altitude mountaineering, you know, thin air and all that, just to put things into perspective, what I was saying at that point was, okay, if the world record for, you know, the full marathon is 2 hours, I'm going to do that in 10 minutes. That was the equivalent of this project. That's why everybody was laughing at me at that point. You know, nobody would believe in this. No sponsorship came in through. But then again, you know, I had a core reason why I was doing it. I just told you one. And the second one was the Nepalese climbers, you know, have been the frontier of a 1,000-meter peak. And, you know, when you hear the story, they always say, oh, yeah, they all just carry, you know, big loads and that is strong and all that. Not really. You know, we are much more bigger than that. We have our own decision-making capability. We all can guide. We all are super technical climbers as well. And I felt like the justice needs to be done there. So I wanted to raise the name of the Nepalese climbers in an international platform, which was very close to me. So that's the second reason. And the third as well was, you know, I truly believe the house that I live is not my home. I believe, you know, Earth is our home because, you know, that's where you're most alive. You know, you don't, if you, let's say, just to give an example, very tiny example. If you stay in your home, if you've got bigger problem, whatever it is, your home doesn't kind of, you know, like relieve you. It doesn't give you the thrive. It doesn't give you excitement. It doesn't give you adventure. But then Earth is a bigger home where, let's say, for example, even though you are super stressed, you've got any problem, if you go for just like hill walking or walk by the river or by the nature or in the glacier, you're super happy. So our actual home is Earth. And I felt like with the experience that I had seen, I really believe that, you know, I need to raise the awareness about climate change and global warming. And those three were the main pillars why I did. So, and I truly believe on those, you know, purpose, and that's why this mission came. And for that, of course, as I said, I had to sacrifice my job. I had to give up my pension. My mom and dad were really upset at the start. My brother didn't speak to me for like 3 months. And there was, you know, full financial gains. I had to remortgage my house. And there was not even still sponsorship. Every day I was working so hard. And I have never been stressed out in my life. And I will tell you this example. I was driving in a motorway, and every day I would go to like London to meet four or five people, do the sales pitch, and come back home. But everywhere I go, they were like, oh, it's not possible. And then if you think you are that good, why we haven't heard your name before? And I used to say, okay, I came from a special forces background and we have to be covered. So even though I had this all world records, I had saved people's life, nobody knew about it. And all this craziness, brother. And I remember that night when everybody was saying no, and this is impossible. I was driving in a motorway and I had like tears coming through my eyes. I stopped. I had to obviously debrief myself, and I cracked on. And this is all was for the bigger purpose. And I felt like I have somehow, you know, achieved, you know, those purposes and those reasons why I wanted to do this this mission. So yeah, it's loads of story over there, brother.
That's beautiful, man. What do you want people to take away from what you did? You said that you wanted to prove human capability. What are the lessons that you want the general public to take away? People who aren't going to climb Everest, who aren't going to try and do this psychopathic endurance events.
Every moment when I was in the mountain, Chris, you know, when I felt like I was going to die, I said, Nims, not today, not today. And I really felt like my story should come out, because I know for a fact it's going to change so many people's life. I know that because it has changed my life. For example, if you look at who is Nims Taiparza, he was underprivileged, you know, kid who was born in Nepal. Didn't even had flip-flops. I used to live in the house, in this room, where like the chicken farming was on top of us. From there, you know, I wanted to join the Gurkhas. Then I didn't even make it on the first attempt. Even though I was the fastest man, I was the fittest guy, there was a vacancy for 25 people. Out of 2,000 candidates who came out there, only 18 passed the physical test. And I was amongst those 18. But just because the guy who was assessing didn't like me, he kicked me out. I had the rights to get that vacancy, that pass, because there was 25 passes. And I was those amongst 18 people who passed those tests. But then I didn't give up. I went second time again, and I eventually made it. Then even from the Gurkhas to going into special forces, the Gurkhas had served in the British military for 200 years, and none of them had ever made it into special boat service. So for me at that point, when I heard about SBS, UK Special Forces, it was like, oh man, this is like James Bond stuff. You know, they are so cool, and you got to be so good at this. You got to be this, you got to be that. You got to be super fit, super smart, all these things. And when I said I wanted to be part of that group, again, my friend started laughing about it. You know, even some people who I really inspire, who I used to get inspired by them, you know, some mentor, some like officers were saying that, Nims, it's not possible. You know, in order to go over there, you shouldn't be only super fit. You got to have the knowledge, like brain of a 10 man. I was like, yeah, whatever, man. But then I worked so hard because it was unknown to me. I came from landlocked country, and then nobody had ever made into SBS, and my own training regime was mental. I had never trained like this in my whole life, brother. I used to wake up at 1 o'clock. I used to carry like 75 to 80 pounds on my back. I used to tab, which is a speed march, 20 kilometers. I used to be at the military camp by like 7 o'clock. Then I do normal physical training with my military guys for an hour, whatever that physical, you know, PT is. Then I work whole day as a labor, because I was engineer and I was, you know, building any structure finisher. So it's tiling, it's painting, it's plastering. And at the evening, I used to, again, run clean fatigue. I used to leave my bargain in the school, and I run back to the house, again, 20 kilometers. Quick food, then I go to the gym. I cycle 65 miles again. From Nepal, not a good swimmer. Then I used to do freestyle, like 100 lengths in 25 meters pool. And I used to literally finish about like, not before 10 o'clock. Then I used to be, again, a couple of hours rest, and then I'm doing that same thing again. And I never said, I'm tired. I never said, oh, it's raining today, or it's snowing today. I never said that. It was, you know, like relentless of, you know, hard work.
What's and the I drive? What was the drive to keep you doing that?
It's the love for the thing, mate. It wasn't never for money. I didn't never wanted to be like, you know, of course, when you join special forces, you get paid a lot. You get so much facilities. You got so many access to the other stuff. And you are super respected as well in the community. But I never joined UK Special Forces to be a general or to make millions or to make more money than anybody else. It was just, I wanted to be part of that cool group who earned their respect, you know? And that's what the driving was come for. It's for the love. And of course, if you love something, you got to commit. You got to dedicate. You got to work 10 times harder than anybody else out there. So, yeah, after serving 10 years with the Special Forces, I was like, okay, yeah, what's next? And then I got this idea of climbing all the 14 highest mountains. And then my purpose was, again, bigger than where I am from, who I am, bigger than my family, bigger than anything else. It was for the human race. And that's what it kept me fired up, brother. And it was like, you know what? Money is nothing. You know, we all go one day. We all die one day. Doesn't matter how much you make. Doesn't matter how much money you have. You're going to go as you can. So if you got the purpose and bigger stuff and you got the happiness, come on. That's who I am, buddy.
That's a beautiful message, man. I spoke to mutual friend of ours and past Modern Wisdom guest Jay Morton the other day, and he gave me some inside information on you. He told me that during Special Forces selection in the jungle, you were nearly killed by a tree while you were asleep.
Yeah, it felt like...
Yeah, he said that dead trees falling is like the number one killer of people in the jungle. And this tree fell and your hammock, there was a U-shaped hole in the tree that was the precise size of you and it just happened to miss you.
Lucky miss, eh?
Bro, you're blessed. Someone out there is looking after you. One of the things, again, Jace, thank you, Jay, brother. You sent me this big voice note that really gave me some more perspective, especially about yourself. And he said he doesn't think most people realize just how difficult of a feat this is. It's one of the most insane physical accomplishments ever, but it's got nowhere near as much press as it deserves. That was what Jay said. Do you think part of this is because going up a mountain is so alien to most people, they don't really understand how hard it is? For instance, Ross Edgley swimming around the UK is another endurance feat that occurred recently. Most people have swam at one point. They've done a couple of lengths in a pool, and then if you were to say, right, now you need to do 6 hours on, 6 hours off all day for 180 days, people can understand what that is. But altitude sickness and the technical side of using crampons and hooking in and climbing and all this sort of stuff, doing rescues, is that so far removed from people's understanding that it's almost like an alien achievement?
I think so, buddy, and you are absolutely right. For a fact, it's not football. You know, that's why, you know, I'm not, you know, as famous as, you know, Messi. Let's put it that way. But what this sport is super dangerous. It's super risky. It's like you live in a moment. You know, any mistake you make, you die. That's it. And there's no coming back to it. That's why people are scared of doing these things. It is a voluntary pain because I decided to do this. But then every step that you take on the snow or you're climbing, you're like, calf is burning, your lungs are on fire, and you feel like you're gasping for the air, you know? And and if you get that wrong as well, you might have, you know, altitude sickness, which could be like you're going to have water in your lungs. You're going to have, you know, like the brain going to swell up because there's a fluid as well. And there's no coming back from this. You just have to either evacuate it from the mountains or you die. It's very simple. And the sport is so extreme that it's kind of an alien that's why people don't understand it. That's why I said, like, when I said I was going to climb all this 8,000 meter peak in 7 months, most people didn't get it. But then those who got it, specifically from the mountaineering world, brother, at first when I say it, when they saw me, they were like, oh, there you go, 14.7. I can sense it. They were like, it's good to say, but do you even know what it takes to climb 8,000 meter peak? Because those people knew it. So those people kind of knew the enormity of this, the size of the project. But then for regular people, they didn't know what it was. So and hence why.
What sets you apart then? You've got these very experienced mountaineers, much more experienced than you were when you started. And they're saying, this is impossible. The previous record was 7 years as opposed to 7 months. What is it about you. Why were you able to do it?
Okay, it's very simple, brother. You know, I had a bit of talent, you know, like such as like people like Usain Bolt, people like Muhammad Ali. They have the natural talent, but then I also worked maybe 20 times harder than any other people in the world. I say it. And every time, and it wasn't just like given to me, brother. You know, I climb in the wind speed of 75 kilometers per hour. People can't even dare to get out of their house in like normal storm. Forget that you are at the death zone and you are like, the wind is blasting your tent with the snow and it's so cold. It's beyond people's imagination. And then, you know what? I haven't slept for 19 days in Pakistan when I was climbing this peak, because we had to run everywhere to make it for the base camp, and then there's a summit. And if you don't sleep for 24 hours, you imagine how you feel. And then that's you without doing anything else. Let's say you don't even have a thing to do. If I'm burning my energy like a 10 man, if I'm climbing in that brutal conditions, if I'm climbing this high altitude mountains where people take 2 months to climb and I haven't slept. Why I did that? Because I believed in my purpose. I believe in the vision. I was going to show the world that nothing is impossible. And then I put my name into it. I put the reputation of UK Special Forces into it. I put the reputation of Gurkhas into it. And I put the reputation of, you know, like Nepalese climbers into it. At no point, I honestly believe that I had the rights to make Mickey out of my project because I didn't do well. And when you believe in anything what you do, sometimes you might have to exaggerate that, but this is who I am. I felt like people have given their life to have that reputation. People have worked so... It wasn't my reputation to damage it. It was built on layers, hundreds of years by those hardworking men behind the scene to build that reputation. And who am I as an Nimstai to ruin that reputation? And I believe in that. It could be wrong, but then I believe that, you know, I had much more to give. And I was showing the world that, you know what? Do not let anybody tell you that you are impossible. Coming from, as you asked Chris earlier, you said, what is the main story here? The main story is like, you can come from nowhere else, like me. You don't need to have an opportunity, like me. You know, you don't need to have support, like me. But then if you work hard enough, if you commit to it, if you dedicate into it, even though there will be negativity, there will be challenge, you turn that into positivity, you can achieve the success against all the odds. That is a very simple message from all this stuff. And I hope anybody can relate their life into this story, because we all have our own mountains to climb. We all have our own challenges. But how we overcome that challenge, how we become that person, I believe that the 8 billion population has got their own talents. But you need to find out what your talent is. And if you love that stuff and you work 10 times harder than everybody else, you will be number one.
You said that you were talented. What does talent mean when it comes to mountaineering? Is it
so
capacity in your lungs? Because you overcame, was it TB and asthma as like a kid?
Yeah, yeah.
So as someone who's pre-asthmatic, to me, doesn't strike me as the sort of person that makes a fantastic mountaineer that goes above 8,000 meters.
Oh, yeah, brother. You know, like I believe, again, you know, the power of believing is massive. Your brain controls your body. That's very simple science, you know. What you believe, if you believe in your brain that you can run 10 kilometers, you can run 10 kilometers. But if you believe that you can just do only 1 kilometer, you do only 1 kilometer. And it's the power of the brain, buddy. And if I feel I can heal quicker, I will heal quicker. Because if you put same patients in the hospital with similar injuries, the person who believes that he can overcome those injuries or whatever it is, will get healed better. And now coming into the capacity, buddy. I wasn't even born at altitude. I was born in the most flattest part of Nepal. You know, it's so hot. Even the flies die at the road, man. It's like super hot. It's Chetwan. But yeah, somehow, you know, I kind of had this ability to acclimatize well. And that's what pretty much all of this, you know, people who live in high altitude have the similar ability. But what it makes me different is the decision-making ability, the purpose, why I was doing this stuff. It wasn't just for nothing. I was on a mission. I was on an objective. I had a clear aim. I had a clear direction. That's why, you know, I became who I am. And it's very simple.
Tell us a story about when you were awake for all of those days in Pakistan.
It was crazy, brother. And at some point where you felt like as you were climbing, like, oh my God, I've went so loud about this project. Jesus, you know, like I cannot obviously come back. You know, of course, sometimes and you just feel like that pain is so hard. You feel like, I wish that avalanche comes from that mountain and just kill me. It's index. And that kills all the pain. But then you think like, no, Nims, it's not about that. And then sometimes, because you haven't slept, you know, you are literally like climbing and you feel asleep and you go, oh, shit. You know, if you miss this one, you probably die. Then human body is kind of, you know, like doing its automatic stuff. But then I used to like, oh my God, no, 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 no. I used to grab the snow and rub in my face, put in my armpit. And I was like, ah, then if that doesn't work for a bit, then I used to shout so loud on the mountain like a madman, you know? Honestly, I used to like, you know, make noise. And then the noise is so loud that it wakes you awake. But then you can do for so long because, you know, you've got so much, you know, energy to do that. Then again, back to your snow and back to, you know, like, you know, your points, why you are doing it. Who are you? All these, you know, motivating factors. So you build them as you go. And then that's something you need to have, I guess.
Has it changed you as a person?
No, man. I'm still simple guy. I'm still, you know, I respect the nature. You know, I still say, you know, I'm humble. But then, you know, we all have ego, brother. We all have people. Everybody as a human has ego. But the size of my ego depends upon who I talk to. If they're respectful, I'm respectful. If they want to come with the biggest, you know, ego that they couldn't put their head inside the door, I'll kick them out already because I think I have done enough to do that. And that's not with me as well. Anybody in the world, nobody wants that kind of a person to deal with. We all have, you know, that kind of stuff, but it's all about how you manage it. I would love to say, and you know, I want to stay humble. I respect those people who are humble. But if people want to come with all this stuff, I don't have time for that, brother. Park it and
move on. Can you explain what it's like going up the side of a mountain? Because I've climbed up hills before, but that's just me one foot in front of the other. It's basically a path on an incline. Mm-hmm. And upon reading the book, there's all different manner of teamwork that goes on with the person in front who has to cut through snow, and there's different heights of snow. Can you just take us through what it's like to go up the side of a mountain?
Okay, so I would like to speak about the trailblazing here. So trailblazing is like you are the first man on that snow, you know, and then during the project, we trailblaze on the snow conditions up to like waist deep and chest deep. And what that means is like, you know, at some point you got to create a gap and then you roll your hip and then you sink in. And then you go, and it's so much tough because you need oxygen in your muscles to operate. When you have no oxygen, your lungs is like dying to support, you know, the air in your muscles. It's tough, bro. It's like even grabbing like 10, depending upon who you are, grabbing a day backpack of, you know, 10 kgs is like dragging a car at the sea level. And if you have to trailblaze like that, every steps count and every breath counts and every second is as painful as probably I can explain. But then, for me, why I do that, maybe I say, I love that kind of stuff. I love when there's a challenge. I love it because, you know, it's something that make me, come on, you know. It also made me feel like I'm living in the moment. I'm not thinking about how much mortgage I have to pay. I don't have to worry about what this is going on, what the world is doing. I'm just living in the moment saying, if I get this wrong, I could probably die because, you know, I don't have enough time to go back to the summit and come back. And sometimes you are leading in a very technical region where it's a blue ice. For example, on K2, if you make a mistake, you die. And then and the other point here is, imagine you are sleeping in the tent at the death journey. It's so cold that, you know, you're in the sleeping bag. It's warm. As soon as you leave that, you got like snow coming into your face. It's like, it's horrible. But then you have to wake up and it's so cold that it takes half an hour to put your boots sometime. To get out of that comfort from that sleeping bag at the middle of the night and then get ready, that is the biggest mission as well. So it's so tough from all level. But as I said, you know,
learning about trailblazing, like the specifics about how you do it, you walk forward, you make a hole in waist high
gap
snow,
distance, yeah.
Yeah, with your chest. So you use your belly, I guess, as like a snow plow. Then you use that extra bit of space, you step forward, and then you do it again. So how slowly are you moving?
Oh, man, it depends upon who you are, man. And sometimes people take so long to climb, you know, all this in a distance, you know. Like, for example, if the snow condition is perfect, I climb the world highest, third highest mountain in just 18 hours. But then for the world's seventh highest mountain, it took us 5 days because it was so tough, the wind conditions, the snow conditions. Yeah, but again, you know, like if you look at the speed of, you know, my climbing style, I climbed Everest, Lhotse, and Makalu. That's the world's first, fourth, and fifth highest mountain in 48 hours. People have never done like this. And then if you see how much it's taking me to do that, you can imagine, guys. So, yeah.
2 days to climb the first, fourth, and fifth highest mountains, all of them back to back.
Yeah, all of them back to back.
What the fuck, man? I don't even know what to say about that. Like, it's the main thing, I think, that it would appear is the, other than the physical fatigue, but some people, there's ultra endurance athletes out there who might be able to deal with that level of fatigue, but it's the altitude changes that would end most people, right?
Yeah, it's the altitude, buddy. You know, you could be, you know, like more far out, or you send ball at sea level. That means nothing over there, brother. And then that's why I said, you know, like it's a completely different game. And, you know, people think just because you are from special forces, you can do. No, not really. I have climbed with so many special forces, and they are like, wow, Nims, how the hell you do this? You know, you're not only trailblazing and you don't just like leave us like so far behind, but then you come up, you go down, and we haven't even recovered for like 2 months since we climbed, you know, with you. So, and then there are so many other people. And I think, but for me, yes, I have got a bit of, you know, like, I would say a bit of like natural talent. That means, of course, I climatize a bit better. But then for me, I love that. When you love so much, that is next level, mate. If you are a football player, or if you love that football so much, you will not realize, you know, if you have run a marathon in process of chasing the ball or whatever it is. But if you make that footballer, whoever it is, to run full marathon, he's going to regret it. He's going to be like, oh my God, it's so tough. Because that's, he doesn't love doing marathon. He loves playing football. So it's all about how much passion you have got for that sport. And that's what it makes the difference. So the simple message again here in life, guys, if you are doing something that you don't love, you should change it. Gone are those days that you have to have one job in your life. You know, the world is changing. Adapt to it. You know, try something new. And if you like that, you could be the number one in that. So
there's a quote,
and it's one life,
there's,
right?
There's
it's
a, there's one a, life. Yeah. A quote that I absolutely love by Naval Ravikant, and it says, mm-hmm. "Become the best in the world at what you do. Keep redefining what you do until this is true." And that's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Keep on redefining what it is that you do until you can be one of the best people on the planet at it. But you're very, very humble about the work ethic that you have. But I would absolutely love for a sports scientist to get a hold of your physiology and look at what your lung capacity is, what your red blood cell count is, what your VO2 max is, your lactate threshold, all of this stuff. Because as much as hard work can take you to this place, there has to be some special sauce that's somewhere inside of you. The same as Eliud Kipchoge. We can say that this guy trains as hard. He lives this, he's like a monk, lives this monastic lifestyle where he's very, very simple man. But there is something special in his physiology that permits him to do that. And I want to get, if there's any sports scientists listening, please just grab a hold of Nims and give us some samples of his muscle fiber and take some bloods from him, because I want to know what the hell's happening inside of your body, man.
Well, we see. We find out.
Hopefully. That would be cool. Talk to us about that Everest photo.
All right, Paul. This, you know, it was used in a wrong reason. It was used, misutilized by the media people, and some of them didn't even give the credit, and I'm super upset. I will tell you the exact thing, because I have been there. This is my world, you know. Every year, 20,000 people climb Mont Blanc. It's the highest mountain in Europe, more than 20,000 people. And then, if you try to capture the people of like 20,000 people, how much queue are you gonna see on Mont Blanc? But unlike Mount Everest, Mont Blanc has got so many different opportunities. It has got different weather conditions, and there are so many, like, I would say, opportunities of getting to the summit at different time interval. And it's not 1,000 meters, it's only, like 5,000. But Everest, only like 1,200 pyramid were issued. And that number is relatively low. It wasn't any bigger than 2014, 2013, 11, or anything else. And a lot of people were commenting about this without knowing about Everest, They were like, oh, it's a tourist and all. It's like, no, it's not. You got to go into the mountain. You got to acclimatize for almost 2 months. You got to climb through this Khumbu icefall that can kill you at any time. Then forget the Lhotse wall. It's like 1.6 miles, and it's about 55 degrees. You got to climb that, then into the South Col, then you got to climb the Everest. Have you done that? If you haven't, then please don't comment. Now, coming into that picture, a lot of these kind of people were over there. And that season, because of the whole weather condition, there was only one good day towards the end of the season. And of course, if you have put your time, effort, money, some people have sold their house, you want to go for that day. You want to take that opportunity. So everybody took that opportunity. It's a human thing. And don't say that, oh, it's a tourist. No, man. If you haven't been there and if you haven't done that, yeah. And that's what it upset me because, people use it for the wrong reason. If you have climbed Everest in whatever way, then you can talk. But then again, be true to yourself, And then a lot of people ask me, oh, Everest is a lot easier. And it's like, not really, man, because I spoke with Reinhold Messner, who climbed all this, 1,000 meters without oxygen. If you remove all the support, manpower, the Sherpas and everybody else, Everest is still the hardest mountain to climb. You cannot even go through the Khumbu Icefall. Forget, Lhotse Wall. So if you don't know enough knowledge, don't talk about it, guys. That's all I want to say.
It was interesting that that's your viewpoint on it, and that's the reason. I mean, why did you take the photo for that reason? Just because it was interesting and
No, no,
impressive?
no, 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 no. I took the reason because I was trying to climb Everest and Lhotse in just 6 hours. My previous record was 10 hours, 15 minutes, which I had broken accidentally. I didn't even knew that. I was just like going in my normal pace. So when I said I was going to break my world record by like, let's say in almost half, because at this point I'm conscious. So, but then I got stuck in the traffic and all that. And I was just like, if somebody, because
Yes.
I'm a man of my word. And if somebody questioned me, like, okay, you said that, but you didn't do it. People are always like that, man. You will find people like this. And I would say, okay, it's good. You say me that, but then this is the reason. It was just for my evidence
I
to
understand.
make this like negative haters shut their mouth. But
Yeah.
then it was used in other purpose, brother.
Yeah,
But hey.
wow. Man, that's so interesting that, in your opinion, as someone who's more qualified than pretty much everybody on the planet to talk about going up and down mountains
Oh.
quickly, you're still saying Everest's the hardest mountain to climb on the planet if it's unsupported. It's still, even
Yeah.
supported, incredibly difficult.
It's still tough.
The reason that the mountain on that day was so heavily populated is because of the backlog of people you get when they do a push to base camp one, base camp two, and then they finally go up and down in a day. You only had a short window of weather, and then
Summit, yeah.
it gets flipped because the message that came across to me as a normal member of the public was, look at these rich, lazy adventure wannabes who are paying probably
Yeah.
cheap local Sherpas to carry all of their stuff up. You know what it reminded me of? This is what I thought when I first saw all of the news stories. Have you seen those images of people who've shot lions in parks in Africa and stuff like that? And there's always it's always a rich American businessman. He's a bit fat, he's sweating, and he's there.
Yeah.
You've got this kind of fat picture of modern day excess human next to a really proud, gracious animal that someone else has tracked and he's killed. And it gave me the same sensation as that. It made me think, have we commodified, have we made so commercialized the tallest, supposedly most difficult mountain on the planet. And what you're saying is that it's quite the opposite. It's still incredibly hard to do. And
it is.
For anyone that actually understands the way that you do a push up the mountain, this queue of people was inevitable because they'd done the hard work and this was their one opportunity to get to the top.
That was one opportunity. And then who wouldn't take that? You know, so if you haven't done that and if you haven't been there, and you could have done, you know, yeah, some people even commented because they climb in different era, different time. It's still the same. If at that point when these people had climbed, and there were other climbers up to this enormous size because of the education, because of the knowledge that people knew that, then you would still be in that same position. It's just the time, you know, it's changing because now people know what it is and people know what it takes. Just because you have been there for the first time doesn't mean like it was so like hard. Still, you got to climb that mountain. Either somebody run full marathon in 2 hours or whatever it is, you still have to run that marathon. Still, you have to do it. You cannot just say, oh, one person did full marathon and he's the first man to do it. Oh, negative, brother. If people are still doing full marathon now, still you got to claim that achievement because you run that same distance. Be broad about the thinking, people. And let's stop being so like, I don't know, you know, people just always pointing this one and like,
judgmental.
Very negative energy. Yeah, you know, we have come into this world where this is a time to adjust. This is the time where I feel like it's not about the race. It's not about, you know, which national you are from. It's not about now this thing's going to change. It's about the human race. And now coming into this, my topic, this is going to happen because with the climate change, with the global warming, if we all as a human being don't work together, we're not going to extinct. We're just going to disappear. So this is where, you know, the things are happening naturally, brother. You know, like where, you know, it's not about, you know, before it was, if you see the world again, back and then people were like about the race. People were from, that is changing now slowly. And then now we are changing for a reason. We're changing for our survival as well. So in every areas that we need to be broader thinking, you know, human, I guess.
Was there not a story associated with your photo to do with people leaving rubbish on the mountain?
No, it wasn't. Thank God.
Otherwise, okay, but do you know what I'm talking about? Have I just made this up?
Yeah. No. So I think, you know, there are a lot of, you know, rubbish and stuff on the big mountains and all. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people are so tired and they don't do it. But then I think now, you know, or also some people probably didn't knew the extremity of that incident, and they probably didn't know how much it's going to affect the world by leaving a trash there. But now everybody is getting educated. You know, people probably, you know, used to leave the electricity on in the house even though if they are not there, but now people are getting educated, so they turn the electricity off, they don't do food waste, you know, at least some people are trying. And then it's exactly the same. I think the education has, the awareness has gone a bit wider now. And of course, all these people love the mountains. And as we progress towards this, you know, next generation, everybody will start cleaning this up. And I think nobody is there as a bad human, I would say. And it's just about the perspective. We all want to do good in life. I don't think anybody in the world want to be known for like super bad, you know, man. I don't know. If there is, there's maybe point whatever percent. But everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to be a good person. So I think we are a good person. So I think we will start cleaning all that up in the future. All my expedition that we run, we're going to, if there's a capacity with our guides and all, we will bring it down. And it's not like the effort of one person. We all have to do together. And as long as everybody put everything what they do as a core message, i.e. like we have to look after our earth in whatever way we do, then it's fair. And I think the whole thing with I just recently was, you know, Sir David Attenborough's, you know, the witness is in a statement. And it's very simple. You know, we don't have to be super like, you know, rogue or super like, you know, like, I don't know, extreme about this. But as long as it's practical and as long as we, whatever decision we make, we put, you know, our home as in earth as a core into that decision making that we're making. will make the whole difference. And that could be small, from like people like us to the politicians to the billionaires, everybody. If everybody plays their part, we're smiling. So yeah.
What did you see in terms of climate change? What effects can you see on the mountain?
So from my own eyes, I was on Amadablam in 2014. At that point, when we were at Kamwan, you know, we could melt the snow and we can cook our food and drink. I went there again in 2018. And then, you know what? There was no snow, anything else. And we had to carry like 20 liters of water from the base camp. And 20 liters is 20 kg. And when you had to carry that of that altitude, just because, you know, the global warming is happening and all that, it kicks you, man. Then the other incident was, I was on Dhaulagiri. So Dhaulagiri is known as the White Mountain because it snows all the time. It's the world's seventh highest mountain. I was there in 2014. And last year when I went, you know, during the Bremen Project Possible, the whole glacier was like melting. And I saw it from my own eyes. And that was a bit really sad moment, brother. And hence why, you know, like last year I said I was going to raise the awareness about climate change. But now, as a NIMSTA, as a person, I'm acting on it. You know, I cannot change the world, but then I can change in my lifestyle. I can do whatever I can do in order to, like, you know, be more sustainable.
You did a number
be
of
more gentle to someone.
You did a number of unplanned rescues as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
Can you take us through some of them?
Yeah, so a lot of people, again, criticize once you do it. Oh, yeah, he climbed with oxygen and all. First of all, if you want to say that, buddy, go and try with oxygen or without oxygen. And you, once you do it, you can talk. If you haven't done it, again, park your ideas, okay? But there is a reason why I climb with oxygen from camp. I only take oxygen from the highest camp, okay? Before that, I didn't take it. And that comes into the story in 2016. When I was climbing Everest, you know, in my holiday between, you know, war tours to Afghanistan and all that, nobody knew about it. And I rescued a climber from 8,450 meters alone. And that 500 meter worth of rescue, it takes probably it takes half a day, depending upon who you, it could even take a full day. I did that rescue in 90 minutes. And when I brought her to camp four, I handed to the rescue team. And it took 2 days for the rescue of five people to bring her to camp two. Then I realized, wow, if I got this oxygen, I can save someone's life like that. Coming from a special forces background, whatever we do in mission, we always have a debrief. What went well, what went wrong, and what are the lessons learned? And the lesson learned from me that Everest expedition was climbing all this mountain, even though I wanted to eventually climb without oxygen, it wasn't about ego. It wasn't about proving that. And then, yeah. And then I was like, okay, if I can save someone's life, I will do it. Now coming into this project, you know, yes, I had this mammoth project in front of me for which I had sacrificed my job, for which I have given up my pension, everything. The first rescue got called up in Annapurna. We were meant to be going on Dhaulagiri, our second mountain. But I was like, you know what? For me, I've never left anyone behind in war. Either I served with the Gurkhas or special forces. And that's not going to happen on the mountain. So I abandoned this Dhaulagiri mission. We went with our team. And
so what happened? Someone rings? Someone rings you? I mean, who calls you?
No, he was missing. Then there was a helicopter, you know, who looked for, you know, Mr. Chin, like Dr. Chin. His wife was, you know, paying for the helicopter to go and search it. They found that he was alive. Then every detail is in the book, brother. But, you know, if I go into this one, I think it's going to be so in-depth conversation. I don't think we have time for that. But then moving into another rescue. So we did that rescue. We saved his life. But then we're seen off because we missed the complete weather conditions. You know, all our team were destroyed. Our lines were gone. And then we had to climb in this brutal condition, which it took us 5 days. I could have probably done that in a day. But then again, you know, going into now Kanchenjunga, the world's third highest mountain, we rescued four people. And this is very important message here, brother. At 8,450 meters, we found a climber whose oxygen was running out. Okay? Then we gave our oxygen to him. So he's straight away, he's alive. We started rescuing him down. Then we got another climber. He also ran out of his oxygen. So we gave our oxygen. So we are off oxygen now. Conducting the rescue from 8,450 meters without oxygen, when you are not climatized, I said, when you are not climatized, is a suicidal mission. But we knew what our body was capable of and all that. So again, you know, all this rescue stuff, you know, for me, it comes because I want to sleep peacefully when I go to bed, brother. You know, I don't want to say that, okay, you know, I left this, you know, man or, you know, female or fellow climbers behind when I had the ability to do the rescue. Yeah, of course, you know, my project is important, but then, you know, life is important than that, brother. So, yeah, but that's who I am. And again, you know, if you're listening to this story, guys, and if you want to, you know in-depth knowledge, you know, why I do things and why I am who I am and all, there is in-depth story on my book, Beyond Possible. So, yeah, feel free to dig in.
That'll be linked in the show notes below, man. Don't worry, we will be pushing everybody to that as well. What's next for you?
Well, I'm preparing for K2 winter expedition. So K2 is the only mountain in the world. It's the second highest mountain in the world that has never been on climb in winter. So all other 8,000 meter peak have been climbed in winter. It's the last greatest, I don't know, whatever the feat you said. So yeah, I'm out there, buddy. I'm out there this Christmas and New Year to go and do this. I'm still working on a sponsorship and hopefully, you know, that will pull through and I can go and do this again in another impossible stuff. So yeah.
So that's this year, climbing the second highest mountain in the world in the worst conditions possible.
Yeah. And no one has ever climbed in a K2 in winter. So yeah.
What is it that's going to make that difficult? Wind speeds, temperature, ice, what is it?
Oh, you're going to get, you know, hurricane winds. It's going to be minus 65 in Celsius. And then it's going to be so cold, you know. It's going to be bone cold, you know. But yeah, we see, man. We see how, you know, like, you know, how we get on over there. You know, at the end of the day, the nature has, you know, bigger things to say. Still, you know, we are positive. We have got the right attitude. We got this speed. But again, you know, sometimes, you know, just being the best is not enough for this kind of, you know, like fit. No one can defeat the nature. We only get the passes. If we got the passes, we'll do it. If we don't get it, and it's beyond our, like, you know, capabilities or whatever it is due to the weather conditions, you got to stay humble.
Man, I absolutely love it. Today's been fantastic. People want to check out more to do with you. Where should they go?
I am available. I think most of my stuff are, you know, updated and in tune on my Instagram at NimsDai. So, yeah. And also, you know, like for K2 and all, once we properly announce it, which I haven't announced it because of the sponsorship stuff at the moment. And if that deal comes through, I'm going to announce it. We'll have a website page and all that. But yeah, just in Instagram at the moment.
Perfect. Beyond Possible will be linked in the show notes below as well. Go and check it out. It's a really fantastic read. And you get to go into all of the details that we didn't have time for today. Man, I don't know. I feel like I want to go and climb up the side of a building or go and do something crazy now. I think that you're a wonderful ambassador, man. It seems like you're very aligned with what it is that you want in terms of purpose, with trying to live in synchronicity with the world. I think that the next few years are going to have wonderful things. So make sure that you get back from K2 in one piece, man, because I think that we need more people like you.
Thank you, my man, and that means a lot to me, brother.